Josh, you got it? All right, Psalm 23. And sorry I didn't get these to you last week. They were slow in the mail, but we got them now. And so you'll have the books from here on out. And page 4, you can use it to do Bible reading ahead of time, fill in the blanks and the answers. I love this chapter. I'm sure you do too. And if you don't, you will really, I think, learn to appreciate it by the time we're done. We're going to go real slow. In fact, we're not even going to hardly talk about the actual chapter 23 of Psalms today. But Psalm 23 is our study. And number one lesson here, number one, we are looking at God found his man. And so we're actually going to be looking at 1 Samuel 16 as well as Psalm 23. But David, called the Shepherd King, is the man who penned the words to Psalm 23. He was a shepherd, and he is forever known as the man after God's own heart. Before we enter into Psalm 23, we'll need to study a little bit about David's life and the introduction to him. For comparison, the Apostle Paul is mentioned 163 times in the Bible. David is mentioned 1,127 times. You know, the Apostle Paul is considered one of the great patriarchs or icons of the faith in the New Testament, but only 163 verses 1,127 times. So David has a lot of attention in the Old Testament and alluded to in the New Testament. 54 chapters besides the Psalms are written about David or for David. And so there's a lot of, in the Bible that has to do with David. With your finger in Psalm 23, we'll go to 1 Samuel 16. 1 Samuel and 16. In the closing days of his life, the prophet Samuel was heavy-hearted over the nation and the condition of his nation, the kingdom of Israel. God had rejected King Saul. King Saul was their idea, and they wanted a king. And God rejected King Saul because of Saul's disobedience. And they needed leadership. Samuel's own sons were not living up to the task. And who was going to be the next king? And so God pronounced to Samuel and then to everyone that he's found a king. I have provided me a king. And God sees ahead, and God has the provision and the ability to see what needs to be done. And a lot of times what we find out is that God begins something long before we ever see it. It's really neat when you pray and find out that God was already working on the answer before you were even working on the prayer, and that he was already providing the solution, and he was already getting the gears and the wheels in motion for what needed to be done. And when God looks for someone to bless and use, according to our box here, he always looks where? At the heart. He does not look at the talent. We look at the talent. You and I, we like to look at the talent. We think that's what's important. And certainly talent is a blessing, but talent is not as impressive to God as it is to us. And so the last paragraph, God did a wonderful work in David's life to enable him to lead an entire generation. Why did the Lord reject Saul and choose David? God saw something in Saul's heart that he could not use. And he saw something in David's heart that he could use. He saw something in Saul's heart that he couldn't bless. But he saw something in David's heart that he could bless. The Bible says in 2 Chronicles 16:9, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of them whose heart is perfect towards him. Not whose head, not who has all the knowledge in the world, but who has a heart that is perfect towards him. Where we find David, when we are introduced to David, the first time we ever see him, he's a insignificant shepherd boy, youngest in his family, and not important to anybody but God. And yet God was using David and even these behind the scenes. By the way, Psalm 23 is probably the shepherd psalm. Well, how did David have the ability to write a shepherd psalm? Because he spent all those years and all that time being a shepherd. The Lord is still searching for those who have a heart for him. He is looking for someone to bless and use. Do you desire to be one of those people? Do you desire to be someone that God can use? God doesn't need your talent. But he needs a heart that is open to him. I think a lot of the psalms that David wrote, he probably first made them up singing to those sheep and singing to the Lord and praising him on the backside of the hill where nobody was watching but God. And let me just say this. All of us, because of our contentment, I guess, all of us do as much for God as we desire to do. If you're doing what you do for God today, it's because that's as much as you desire to do. And the more we desire to serve him, the more we desire to bless him and to worship him and to allow him to use us, the more he will if our heart is right with him. And so that's our introduction here. But I'm going to go ahead and start reading 1 Samuel 16, verse 1. And the Lord said unto Samuel, how long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil, and go, and I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. And so Samuel he's very brokenhearted. He loved Saul. At one time, Saul had a lot of potential. He was a humble person. But things changed in King Saul's life, and he became very proud and very stubborn. In chapter 15, it says, verse 22, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offering and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Because behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. Saul rejected the command of God to do what he was supposed to do in that story. And God, and by the way, Saul tried to reason and say, well, look what I did. I didn't kill all the animals because I wanted to use them for a sacrifice. But God said, kill all the animals. And so Samuel says, do you think God delights as much in burnt offering and sacrifice as he does in obeying the voice of the Lord? Rebellion is wickedness and idolatry. Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. And his heart became hard and arrogant and proud. I can only imagine what it would be like to be a king where people kind of bowed down to you and whatever you said was the law. And they gave you their money and all this sort of thing. I can imagine how easy it would be to become proud and arrogant. And that's what happened to Saul, and to the point where God couldn't use Saul. And so Samuel is brokenhearted about this. Because he loved Saul. He saw Saul from the beginning to the end, and it broke Samuel's heart. However, God says to Samuel in chapter 16, verse 1, how long are you going to cry over this? You need to understand, I've got someone else I've provided me to be a king. So the Lord is in control. Samuel felt as if the kingdom were out of control. We know what that's like. The nation had rejected his leadership and wanted a king. Now the king had been rejected by God. It seemed that everything he had lived for was falling apart. Remember, Samuel was a good man. He was dedicated by his mother Hannah to serve the Lord and to serve his nation, and he did, and he did a good job. And so Samuel's broken over this. He sees the destruction not only of King Saul, but he sees the real vulnerableness of his whole nation and the mess they're in. We do not have to worry our way through life because God is in control. Why worry when you can pray? We sing that as a chorus, but I wonder if we think about it. Why worry when you can pray? We don't have to worry our way through life. God is in control. It does not matter. It does not matter who's king. It does not matter who's president. It does not matter if we lived in one of those states where you had a tyrant for a governor, and I'm glad we don't, but it does not matter. All those things do not matter. As a matter of fact, coronavirus is well in hand up in heaven. They don't have one case of it up there. They don't even have snow up there, you know. They're not worried about the stuff that gets us down. And we need to recognize God's in charge. He's in control. When we experience difficulties in life, we need to know that God is in control. I'm going to read you these verses in Philippians chapter 4. You can turn there with me. Philippians chapter 4, great verses. Be anxious, be full of care for nothing. Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. We should be able to remain steady and have a confidence, and the peace of God that passes all understanding should be able to remain with us, and not to be careful for anything. Be careful for nothing is the same thing as saying, be full of care for nothing, or be anxious for nothing. He never loses control. He's always at hand. See, the key verse is verse 5. Let your moderation be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. The Lord is always at hand. He's always near. He's always just around the corner. He's always right where we need him to be. God hasn't let go of the reins. No one's taken over control of him. He's still got to hold the steering wheel. And so God is in control. So be full of care for nothing. And yet Samuel had felt rejection. He was broken because everything that, you know, the man that he anointed is now no good to be the king. The people that he had served for so long seemed to be just kind of wallowing and spinning in circles. And God says, how long will you mourn for Saul? God was saying, how long will you go without trusting me with this matter? And I think there comes a point where we all have to admit, you know what? Crying too much is crying too much. Worrying too much is worrying too much. You know, Paul said, I besought the Lord thrice that he would remove this thorn. And he said, my grace is sufficient. And so Paul said, I besought him three times, remove my thorn. But not 33 times. Not day after day after day, whining and complaining. No, after the third time, God said, look, Paul, I want you to have this thorn, and my grace is sufficient for you. And God understands. And so there comes a point where we have to stop fretting and worrying about something that God still has in charge. God's still in control. I think about loved ones and loved ones who pass away. We all know that we lose people to death, and we do not like it, and we do not always understand it. However, if they're saved, they're not lost. They're still with the Lord. He's still in control. And he's not crying about it like we are sometimes. He's got it all under control. Try to remember that. Understand. And so it's not that God's being hard on Samuel. He's just saying, how long are you going to mourn? It's time to move on. We've got to move forward here. I don't know what America's future is going to look like. I do believe it's different than what we've seen in the past. And here's what I'm going to say about this. As much as we want to get mad and upset and whatever about freedoms lost, understand this. God's still in charge, and there's a reason for everything. I'm not opposed to these people that are marching on the governor's mansion and telling him he's a ding-dong or she's a ding-dong or whatever it might be. I'm not opposed to that. But there comes a point where, you know what, God's in charge, and we're going to trust the Lord. And we're not going to mourn or fret or lose our cool or lose our sense of understanding. You know, I think at some point it kind of tells the government who you really think is in power if you act like that too much. Because if you act like that too much, they realize they must have the upper hand. But if you recognize that it doesn't matter what they do, I have a different king. I serve, you know, and I've said this many times, and I do mean it. I don't do what I do, and I didn't come today because there's a Bill of Rights. Okay? It's nice to have the Bill of Rights, but that's not why I'm here. In other words, if they said the Bill of Rights don't matter anymore, I'd still be doing what I do. I might have to do it a little differently, but I'd still be doing it. Because it really doesn't matter. I still have a king that's higher than any other authority, and I'll always make sure I follow him. And so we have to remember, God's still king. Saul might not be a very good king anymore, but God still is. And remember, God always wanted to be their king. God never really wanted them to have any other king but him. And so all this is not out of God's control. Things are not spiraling out of his control. So like Samuel, all of us have things that are difficult to give to God. We have a hard time just letting God have it. When we surrender these things to Christ, he may not give immediate deliverance, okay? But he will give us the sweet comfort of knowing that he is in control. It is his work. It's his responsibility. It's his job. It's our job to yield and let him have his way. So let's read some more of these verses in 1 Samuel 16. Verse 2, and Samuel said, how can I go? See, here's the other problem. Saul is such a meanie that if Saul finds out that Samuel goes and anoints a different king, Saul will kill Samuel. He's just crazy. And so Samuel says, how can I go? If Saul hear it, he will kill me. And the Lord said, take an heifer with thee and say, I am come to sacrifice the Lord, which was true, and call Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show thee what thou shalt do, and thou shalt anoint unto me him whom I name unto thee. And Samuel did that which the Lord spake, and came to Bethlehem, and the elders of the town trembled at his coming, and said, comest thou peaceably? And he said, peaceably, I am come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Sanctify yourselves, and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons, and called them to the sacrifice. It came to pass, when they were come, that he looked on Eliab, the oldest brother, and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance, or on the height of his stature, or on the hair of his head. I just had to throw that one in there. Because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Man looks at what we would call Hollywood chiseled appearance, but God looks on the heart. God's always working, and God was preparing young David when nobody knew about him except the Lord. If you read 1 Samuel 16 carefully, you're going to see that God had to deal with Samuel, and then Jesse, and then Jesse's sons, and then finally David. And he's working in every person's life behind the scenes. We don't always see what God's doing, but he's doing something. Behind the scenes, he's doing something. Once in a while, I get a glimpse of what he's doing, but I don't usually see everything he's doing. I just sometimes, oh, that's neat to see what's going on there. And God's doing it. Just as he works in these lives, he's working in our lives too. Trust him. Believe that. Many times, we're convinced that great things cannot be done. And we're brainwashed into unbelief. Somehow, Samuel got to the point where everything was so wrapped around Saul, King Saul, that Samuel just couldn't realize that God can do something different. And Saul had become so powerful and so all authoritarian that Samuel just thought that it's all about Saul and his attitude, and forgetting that God's still in charge. And it's easy to be brainwashed into unbelief. It's easy to become convinced that it can't be done. And I want to encourage you, it can be done. And I'm encouraged as I read this story, and I'm reminded that while everybody else is paying attention to King Saul and maybe Samuel and the kingdom and the Philistines and the battles and all the different fighting and everything going on, back where nobody's watching is this insignificant young man with a bunch of stinky sheep, and God's preparing him to be something special. I never forget the concept and the idea that, you know, the most insignificant young man could be the next pastor of Mountain View Baptist Church. And could really be something great, and really be something. And you know, it doesn't have to be anybody that we think is chiseled or looks the part. God is working behind the scenes. And so here we see the next section here, 6 through 11. One by one, Jesse's sons passed by. First it was Eliab, and God says, verse 7, don't look on the outward appearance. God, I look on the heart. Verse 8, then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And God said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Samuel said about God, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Then Jesse made Shammah to pass by, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. And again Jesse made 7 of his sons to pass before Samuel. And Samuel said unto Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. And Samuel said unto Jesse, are here all thy children? And he said, well, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. I'm just going to add a little bit to this, you know, fill in the blank here between the lines. Well, there's the youngest one, but he just keeps the sheep. You don't want him. I mean, look at Eliab. He's got muscles. He's tall. No. Samuel says, no, we're not going to sit down until I meet number 8, because 1 through 7 didn't cut the mustard. God isn't interested in any of these. This isn't who he's called. And so Samuel says in verse 11, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And by the way, the fact that Jesse could go send and fetch him tells me that he could have sent and fetched him earlier. But apparently even Dad didn't think David was the choice. You know, maybe Dad didn't realize what was all going on here, but Dad didn't even think that it was that important that number eight showed up to the feet. I mean, Samuel is an important person. As a matter of fact, of all eight brothers, the one that would have loved to have met Samuel the most was David. Samuel was a godly man. And I'm sure that David would have been thrilled to be there, but probably they didn't even tell David Samuel's coming. They probably just left him out there. Well, you don't know what hurt him. And so send and fetch him. And so verse 12, he sent and brought him. Now he was ruddy and with all of a beautiful countenance. I think ruddy means red, you know, nice complected, maybe sunburnt, and of a beautiful countenance and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. So we see here that God is working behind the scenes, and we don't always understand what he's doing. And we start to wonder whether or not God's doing anything and whether or not he's going to fix anything or make it right. Have you ever felt that God was not working all your life at all? Many times we do not believe that great things can be done, but we need to remember that he is always at work. A lot of times the problem is that we got our eyes focused on what we thought needed to be done. We got our eyes focused on my kingdom come, my will be done. And God is saying, no, I got a completely different direction. I'm not even going after the Saul family. I'm going after a whole different family here. I'm going a completely different direction. I'm not thinking like you're thinking. And so a lot of times our frustration and our anxiety and our worry is because God's dismantling what we thought was supposed to happen because he's got a better way. And so then lastly, the Lord uses people whom others overlook. And we read verse 12. The Lord says, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil, verse 13, and anointed him in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. Jesse did not expect David to be the one. Nobody did. I'm not even sure how much Jesse understood what was happening because it was all kind of secret. But all of a sudden, Samuel says, all right, this is the one God has chosen. And they're probably wondering, what do you mean God has chosen? And then Samuel pulls out this container of oil and anoints David to be king. Now we know, as if you keep reading, older brother didn't even really like David. When David showed up at the scene of Goliath, Eliab, you know, accused him of you know, just being naughty and just being arrogant or whatever. Well, the truth was, it was brother Eliab and the others that were probably arrogant. And here's this humble shepherd boy who all of a sudden's been anointed to be king. What an amazing thing. What an awesome thing. And I'm sure there was somebody standing there going, what, him? He did not have, at that moment, kingly qualifications according to man. He did not know much about the palace. He did not know much about, you know, government procedure, probably. He probably didn't know much about warfare, although he knew how to handle himself. But he didn't know a whole lot about stuff like that, and he probably was not educated in the political sciences of the day. He probably just didn't have all that you think a guy's supposed to have. He's going to be a leader. But he had what God was looking for. He had what God wanted in a man more than anything. And that's why he called him. And then God made sure that David got that other stuff. If, as a matter of fact, if you keep reading in Samuel, you'll find out that David was invited to sit before Saul and to play his harp. And probably he then learned some things about palace etiquette and palace procedure and things like that and proper kingdom and kingly ways. But God uses people whom others overlook. On that day when Samuel came to the house of Jesse, no one thought to send for the youngest son out in the field. Nobody thought they needed him. And if anyone would have loved to meet Samuel, it would have been David. Yet David was forgotten and overlooked. I want to go now to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians 1, let's start in verse 18. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved is the power of God. I mean, think about it. As a people, the one symbol that we have is the cross. Well, what is the cross? It's an execution instrument. You know, now it's considered, you know, decoration. But 2,000 years ago, people would say, okay, excuse me, why do you have an execution instrument hanging on your wall? Why do you have that thing up on the top of the very point of your steeple up there? Why do you have that on your necklace? Why would you wear an execution instrument? I don't understand that. Because, I mean, it'd be like the hangman's noose or the electric chair. Why do you have that? Because that's where our Savior died on the cross. And that negative symbol became a positive symbol. That negative instrument became positive. And so the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness. But to us which are saved is the power of God, the idea of the cross itself. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and I will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. I'm amazed that God is able to use the preaching of the gospel the way he does. I've often wondered, how in the world can this simple message change people's lives? But it does. For after that, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. And whenever us preachers get too big for our britches, it's just to remember, it's just the foolishness of preaching. It's nothing that we've done. For the Jews require a sign, the Greeks seek after wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, unto Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For ye see your calling, brethren, and so now Paul is talking to the people he's writing to, ye see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. Now let me just break it down to today's vernacular. For you look at your church, brethren, I mean, you see, there's Ron Spear there. And then there's Larry Matheson sitting there. I mean, God doesn't need, you know, I mean, God doesn't choose the high and mighty. He doesn't choose, I mean, it says in verse 27, but God hath chosen the foolish things of this world. There we go. And God hath chosen the weak things of the world. God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And base things of the world, and things which are despised, hath God chosen. Yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are. Why? Verse 29. That no flesh should glory in his presence. You missed it if you think David was super, super, super good with a slingshot. Now, I do think David was good with a slingshot. But you missed it. You missed it if you think that David was just super superior in his military training. I don't know that he was. I don't think he was. But here's what I know. David was right with God, and God, in his very backwoods way, made sure that David was ready to lead the nation and to lead him to lead them like a shepherd. A shepherd. David learned some things that Saul never learned, and that was sheep and shepherds. It's missing out of our library, but I've reordered it. It'll be here soon. There's a video called Super Sheep. We have to remember that we're just a bunch of sheep. And David was able to pen those words. We'll read them in a minute. But David learned some things by God's design, not by anybody's manipulation or plan. David didn't sign up for Bible college somewhere. God had Bible college on the backside of the desert for him. And we read about the foolish things. And this is why when he stood before Goliath, his own brother thought he was a fool. All the other Israelites thought he must be crazy. Saul thought, you're crazy, but what do we have to lose? You're just a runt of a kid. You know, here, take my armor. I hate to see you, you know, not without a fighting chance. I mean, nobody had any hope that David was going to win. But David stands out there, and Goliath, he's laughing at him. What, you sent this runt? This is foolish. What are you guys doing? And David understood, you know what? God has anointed me to be the king. So I got a feeling I'm going to live through this episode with the giant right now. God's anointed me to be the king. God helped me slay that bear and that lion. I think when the lion and the bear slaying episode took place, I don't think anybody was there to watch except for God. And I think David probably stood up and heart pounding, probably got on his knees and thanked God for the protection and the deliverance. And then learned to have a confidence not in himself, but in the Lord and to trust the Lord. And God has chosen the foolish things. I hope that you understand how important it is that people don't say, well, he's such an eloquent speaker, that's why people listen. If that's the case, then they're really listening for the wrong reason. They're so talented, and oh, their music is so... If that's the case, that's the wrong reason to be listening. A lot of people go to church to listen to music for the wrong reason. And preaching or whatever else might be going on. It becomes about us and entertainment. But what's interesting is when it doesn't seem to make sense. When the guy up there preaching is kind of foolish. And the music isn't, you know, stage production quality. And yet God blesses. And the people scratch their head and wonder, how did that happen? What's going on here? If we try to steal his glory, he'll stop blessing. I don't want that. I think I've done that before. Pretty foolish of me to even try. But when we try to steal his glory, when we try to say, yeah, I did that. And I think there was times in David's life where he started to do that. We start to talk about what we did. Sometimes I hear people talk about what they gave to the church. Yeah, I tell you something. God doesn't need your money. God's got way more than you got. And he is not impressed with whatever it is you and I, quote unquote, give. As a matter of fact, what is it that you have that he didn't give to you? The Lord is not concerned with ability, but with the condition of our hearts. As God sees your heart. By the way, I just want to stop and say this. I hope we never have that. I hope that people always say, I don't know how that church does it. Because they don't have any rich people. I mean, they just got Mr. Spear, and they just got Dave, and they just got Bob, and they just got Dan. None of those people got any money. I don't understand how he does it. I hope that's what they say. I hope they wonder how. I hope that they realize it must be the Lord that does it, not them. The Lord is not concerned with ability, but with the condition of our hearts. As God sees your heart, does he find someone he can bless and use? If you're sitting on the back side of the desert and you're doing exactly what you were told to do, then can you trust the Lord to take care of the rest? If you think you're not doing something important, I want you to understand you are doing something important. I hope that other people in our church besides me noticed every child that was here today. And there were some new ones. Or some that haven't been here in a while. I hope that you notice that, and that if I asked you right now, you can name off all the kids that are here and their names. You know why? They're more important than you think they are. As a matter of fact, Jesus said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not." I hope you pay attention to what seems to be not so important and insignificant. It is important. It's all important. I hope you notice those that don't seem to matter maybe to others. They do matter. I hope that if you're like me, and of course I'm the pastor, so I'm the shepherd, but I hope you pay attention when someone's missing, you know, when someone's out of place or just not there. Maybe, you know, normally they're not, that you're concerned. Why? Because you pay attention. You notice the individuals. And I hope that you're aware that we don't need ability. Church is not some kind of a musical recital where we take our talents, we bring them to the church and show off our talents. You can do that somewhere else. I don't want to do it here. We're about praising the Lord. That's what we're supposed to be about. And if you've got talent and ability, use it for the Lord and give God the praise. But God's not interested. He's not concerned with that. That's not what he's looking for. But what he is looking for is someone who was given a job to do, and they do it well. Now, I'll be honest with you. If I was sitting on the backside of the desert, and a lion came by. Come on, Mr. Spear, you got to be honest about this too, because I can see Mr. Spear. As soon as the mountain lion shows up, Mr. Spear is on the run. Screaming like a girl. Yelling for Joyce to grab the gun. Look, they're just sheep, man. And my brothers don't have to watch them. I have to watch them. And it's not like I own these sheep. And it ain't worth me getting bitten and chewed up and maybe killed by a lion or a bear. Look, when I was a young man, I would read grizzly bear stories in Outdoor Life magazine. And the more I read, the more scared I got about grizzly bears. I am still scared of grizzly bears. I'm just scared of them. I read about attacks, and they scare me worse than the lion do. Because I read, you know, so many stupid stories I shouldn't be reading. I got myself all worked. But they're true. I mean, those things can kill you. Let's be honest. I mean, I'm just asking, how many in here would say, hey, stupid little sheep's about to get eaten by a lion or a bear. I ain't letting that happen. You don't have a gun, by the way. It isn't the days of pew, pew, pew. And he did it with his bare hands. He did it with whatever he could find to hit him with a rock or a club or whatever. And he wrestled them and killed them. I don't know how you do that. But he said he killed a lion and a bear. For a sheep. For a sheep that he didn't even own. Really? And nobody saw it. And probably, maybe David came back and said, hey, Dad, I killed a lion. Oh, that's good. Thanks. Glad you did that. Thanks. Surely I get promoted, right? Somebody else gets to watch the sheep now? No, you get back out there. And no, I mean, nobody's giving him any credit for that. Nobody's rewarding him for that. But up in heaven, somebody said, that is impressive. There's a young man with a heart who takes his job seriously and who does it well. We're always trying to teach our kids about, you know, whatever job you have, you're supposed to do it well. Yeah, but nobody's going to see if I made my bed or not. Yeah, somebody will see. Well, nobody's going to see. I mean, it's our turn to clean the church. Last week, somebody else cleaned it, and they did a really good job. I don't have to do it very much this week. Somebody sees all that. Somebody sees all the behind-the-scenes things that we do. He's watching. He knows, and he's saying, I can use that person because they're faithful to their job even when nobody's watching. I'm fairly good when people are watching. Probably you are too. But when we're not being watched, or we don't think we're being watched. Remember, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. And God said back there in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 16, I've prepared somebody. I've prepared them. In other words, guess who allowed the bear to come in the first place? Guess who allowed the lion to show up in the first place? Guess who was proving to David that he could help him and he could handle it to the point where he's able to stand before Goliath and say, my God will help me with this. And that's the kind of backstory behind the scenes training that was going on in David's life and the preparation that God saw. God sees your heart. Does he find someone that he can bless and use? Back in Psalm 23, I'm just read it and we'll stop today. Psalm 23, when I read this, I try to think about David sitting on the backside of the desert in the wilderness with his sheep. I try to think of David when he first thought of these words. I wonder if he looked at those sheep and he realized, you know, I love these sheep. They're defenseless, they're helpless, but they are lovable, and they need protection, and they need guidance, and they need someone to feed them. And all of a sudden, David started thinking about God. And David loved the Lord. And I don't know the background all to this, but I know that David loved the Lord. And David was thinking about God, and all of a sudden David realized, you know what? The Lord is my shepherd. Just like I'm these little critters' shepherd, that's how God is with me. He defends me, and he provides me for me. The Lord is my shepherd, and because he's my shepherd, I shall not want. I don't need anything. He takes care of me. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures, because I'm too dumb to know when I should lie down in green pastures. So he maketh me to lie down in green pastures. And he leadeth me beside the still waters, because I'm just like these sheep. I get all wound up if the waters aren't calm enough for me. And he restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. Why? Because he's with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. I wonder if he was thinking about Samuel anointing his head. Thou anointest my head with oil. And then there's a semicolon, and he stopped. Maybe there's about a little gap there in my Bible between oil and the next word. Thou anointest my head with oil. And maybe tears start to come to his eyes. My cup runneth over. You like that old cowboy poetry? I'm drinking from my saucer because my cup is overflowed. That's what David's saying here. My cup runneth over. God's been so good that it's spilling over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that's what we're going to be looking at as we go through this book together in the next few weeks. Let's close in prayer. Lord, we thank you for the Bible.